Radio Prague News.
The Minister of Transport, Vít Bárta, has called for a revolution in motorist fines, with their level based on the ability to pay. Police have stepped up traffic checks for the expected Sunday rush back from holidays. And Prime Minister Petr Nečas has estimated that up to 8% of state employees will leave their jobs due to budget cuts. Transport Minister Vít Bárta has called for motorist fines to be related to their ability to pay. Mr. Bárta has apparently been inspired by the systems in Switzerland and Finland, where such wealth-related penalties exist. He says such fines could help stop Czech roads being a wild west for rich young drivers. Although the police have welcomed the idea, it has been given a cool response from the two other government coalition parties, Topo 9 and the Civic Democrats. Prime Minister Petr Nečas said on Sunday he was opposed to the idea. Fears have also been raised that such a step might be unconstitutional because it infringes the principle of equal treatment before the law. The minister wanted to table his proposal by the end of the year. Police have stepped up controls on motorists to accompany an expected rush back home following holidays. Sunday is the last day of the traditional holiday period, with heavy traffic expected. Police say checks will be carried out on motorists at 110 points across the country. In Prague, police have also called up a helicopter to help them stop congestion and pinpoint dangerous drivers. Around 155 people died on Czech roads during the holiday period, according to initial figures. Prime Minister Petr Nečas has estimated that between 5 and 8% of state workers will leave their jobs due to proposed budget cuts next year. Cuts of 10% have been demanded in ministry budgets. The Prime Minister said there was a choice between across-the-board pay cuts of 10% or a 10% cut in employee numbers. He reckoned that most ministries would opt for a mix of the above, but there would be a bigger emphasis on job cuts. The 2011 budget will start to be debated in the lower house of parliament in October. The government programme calls for cuts across the public sector, with the exception of teachers. In tennis, Czech player Květa Peška and Slovak partner Katarína Srebotnik have won the New Hampshire doubles title. The pairing beat the US combination of Bethany Matek-Sands and Megan Shaughnessy 7-5, 6-love. The Czech-Slovak pairing saved a set point at 4-5 in the first set and then went on to win 9 games in a row. It's the second major title for the pairing this year. The New Hampshire event is seen as a warm-up for the US Open. Staying with sport, Czech cyclist Jaroslav Kulhavi won the last of the series of World Championship Mountain Bike Championship events at Windham in the US, becoming the first Czech to achieve such a success. Kulhavi was third in the overall championship rankings, which were headed by Swiss cyclist Nino Schurter. The 25-year-old Czech was second in the World Championship event last month, a few days after winning the European title. And finally, turning to the weather, showers with occasional heavier rain will continue throughout the week. Top daytime temperatures will be around 17 degrees Celsius. I'm Chris Johnston, and that was the news.
You are listening to Radio Prague, the international service of Czech radio. I'm Daniela Lazarová. Coming up in today's show, Mailbox with Pavla Horáková, in which she'll quote from your letters and answer your questions. Then we'll offer you a letter from Prague, this one from Jan Richter. And later on in the show, a fresh edition of Science Journal with Christian Falvey, in which he will talk about a fascinating archaeological dig in the very center of Prague. All that coming your way, but first Pavla opens the mail.
Thanks for tuning in to Mailbox, Radio Prague's weekly slot for your views, questions and comments. And let's begin with this question from our regular listener Alex Torbeni from Bali, who's a keen stamp collector.
Has the Czech Postal Bureau ever published a joint issue stamp with another country? I've never seen a joint issue stamp from the Czech Republic, so I assume that the Czech Postal Bureau never published that special stamp. I like stamp collecting, and I have some joint issue stamps from other countries.
There have been quite a few of them. The first one as early as 1993, the year the independent Czech Republic was established. In that year, the Czech Republic launched a joint stamp with its former federal partner Slovakia, featuring the Greek missionaries Cyril and Methodius. Another joint stamp with Slovakia was issued in 1996, featuring the painter Andre Nemes. A year later, there was a joint issue of as many as five countries, the Czech Republic, Poland, Hungary, Germany, and the Vatican, the countries honoring the legacy of Saint Adalbert. In the same year, there was a joint stamp with Israel, featuring Jewish monuments in the Czech Republic. In 2004, there was a large joint issue when the Czech Republic joined the European Union along with nine other countries, following two other extensive issues in 2000 and 2001, titled Europe and Civilization, respectively. Other individual countries that have issued joint stamps with the Czech Republic include Croatia, France, Belgium, and most recently Luxembourg, with this year's stamp marking the 700th anniversary of the accession of the Luxembourgian dynasty to the Czech throne. Stephen Bell from Canada responds to a recent program by Chris Johnston titled The Czechoslovak Legions: Myth, Reality, Gold and Glory.
I learned something I didn't know but suspected in Czech history, that it has a military history that stretched out beyond the country's borders in the last 200 years. And to learn that the Czech forces served in Siberia for 3 years was an interesting fact for me. Quite the trek beyond the comforts of home indeed. Nice to see the call of duty back then was as strong as the feeling I get from reading other military articles on Radio Prague of today.
Howard Barnett from England has this question.
Please can you tell me what the position of the playwright Václav Havel is as regards government, or is he just a playwright now?
As Václav Havel's CV on his official website says, his occupation since 2003 has been that of a citizen. His last term of office expired on February the 2nd, 2003, and since then he has not held any political post. According to his website, Mr. Havel is involved in a number of human rights and charitable projects, for instance within the Vize 97 and Forum 2000 foundations. He also devotes some of his time to writing and most recently film directing. Grant Skinner, also from England, would like to know,
what do you do with the reception reports after you've read them? Do you keep them and file them, or do you shred them and recycle them? If you recycle them, how much do you think you recycle in a year?
I'm afraid I won't be able to give you precise figures, but I will at least try to illustrate the situation. Both in 2008 and 2009, the whole of Radio Prague received close to 21,000 letters and emails, most of which were emails. Most of those emails were just read on screen and never printed out. I don't have the figures for reception reports as such, but in case of the English section, it is usually a third of the overall amount. But letters and those emails that get printed out are recycled along with other paper used in Radio Prague. All documents containing personal data are always shredded before recycling. Thank you very much indeed for those questions and comments, and please keep them coming. Finally, let me repeat this month's quiz question for one last time. Regular listeners may remember that our mystery lady more than 2 years ago was Sofie Chotek, the wife of Archduke Franz Ferdinand, who along with her husband perished in the Sarajevo assassination in 1914. They were shot while sitting in a car. There was another person of Czech origin in the car, and he's our mystery man for this month. You have until Tuesday to send us his name to english@radio.cz or Radio Prague 12099 Prague. Next week on this program, we'll read some of your correct answers and we'll select the lucky winner. Until then, thanks for listening.
My thanks to Pavla Horáková, and Pavla will be back same time next week, as she said. If you'd like to check out this week's mailbox online, you can do so at www.radio.cz. Now it's time for a letter from us, and this one comes to you courtesy of Jan Richter.
The 18th of August marks the 130th anniversary of birth of one of the most distinct figures of the old Austrian Empire, Emperor Franz Joseph I. He ruled his peoples for nearly 7 decades, and although Czechs today don't seem to identify with this particular period in their history, the legacy of the aged monarch, as he was semi-officially referred to towards the end of his life, is still apparent in most of his former empire today. Franz Joseph was 18 when he ascended to the throne, and 86 when he died. His reign lasted for over 67 years, which made him one of the longest ruling monarchs in European history. When he took over the monarchy in 1848, he was hailed as someone who would lead the country from the turmoil and unrest of revolutionary times and carry out some essential reforms to ensure its modernization and future peaceful development. But by the end of his long reign, the monarch had lost most of his credit, at least in this part of the empire. He was deemed decrepit and out of touch, and was even ridiculed by some of the free thinkers who were soon to become the elites of the new countries in Central and Eastern Europe. Here is an example. Czechs sometimes called Franz Joseph Starý Procházka or Old Procházka. Procházka is a common Czech surname, which literally means walk. A popular legend has it that when their emperor opened a new bridge in Prague, the next day a picture appeared in the paper with the caption, "Walk on the bridge." Since then, Czechs referred to the emperor as Old Procházka. But Franz Joseph's influence over the disloyal Czechs continued long after he passed away in 1916, in the middle of the war that swept away the empire. Czechoslovakia's founding father, President Tomáš Garrigue Masaryk, soon took up some of the thinking and physical mannerism of the ancient regime. A professor of sociology, he was soon riding his white horse around his summer residence at the Lány Chateau, wearing a semi-military uniform. Around him he built up a court of sorts of advisers and confidants who helped him exercise unofficial influence over public affairs that had no constitutional basis. Since Masaryk's times, the magnificent Prague Castle, where Bohemian kings once dwelt, has been the seat of Czech presidents. Even today, Václav Klaus sometimes gives the impression that he is too big for the role of plain civilian figurehead, and that a crown would fit nicely on his head. Czechs are a markedly egalitarian people, with little appreciation for the social and political pyramid typical for the society in the days of the old empire. In reaction to the fusty, hierarchical and snobby Austro-Hungarian society, one of the first laws adopted by the newly emerged Czechoslovakia in 1918 banned the usage of aristocratic titles. Despite this, one of the country's most popular politicians today is Foreign Minister Karel Schwarzenberg, who stems from a high-ranking aristocratic family and does in fact have the title of prince, by which he is sometimes referred to by his supporters. But the shadow of Emperor Franz Joseph is longer than that. His governments introduced thorough reforms of the constitution, administration and education. During his rule, Bohemia and Moravia became heavily industrialized, and the train network that was built in the second half of the 19th century was one of the densest in Europe. The emperor liked to start working early in the morning, which is reportedly the reason why Czech factory workers also start very early in the morning. Until recently, factories started work at 6 a.m. The Austro-Hungarian Empire has often been described as the prison of nations because of the emperor's lack of empathy with the emancipating nations of the empire. But today historians argue that the times of Old Procházka were in fact one of the happiest periods in modern Czech history.
My thanks to Jan Richter for that letter from Prague. And now in the last part of our show, a fresh edition of Science Journal with Christian Falvey.
This is Národní třída, the Národní třída that most of us know was a metaphorical hole even before the dig, a line of fast food kiosks between two chrome and plastic socialist structures that was a favorite stomping ground for beggars and winos. Plans to develop the plaza for office and shopping space has peeled back the grimy surface of this historic part of Prague and revealed century after century of history in strata that can be read like a book back to the 1100s. Here to do that for me is Polish archaeologist Tomasz Cymbalak, who is heading the dig here.
What we see in front of us are the remains of the townhouses that used to be here. There are five of them here, and the way they looked changed from small houses of townspeople to larger buildings that were built further back from the street. Through time, the structure gets more dense. They added wells and waste pits. And those are the places where we make the most finds. And aside from those coins, pottery fragments, bones and so on, we have taken various samples for archaeobotanic analyses, so we will be able to reconstruct the early Prague's diet, the illnesses they suffered from, and so on.
So, from where we're standing now, about 4 or 5 meters above the bottom of the dig, we can see a very tight kind of maze of stone walls. You can see how busy the city was that long ago.
Yes, it shows the very lively development of this part of the city. The place where we are standing is actually the border between Old Town and New Town. Right next to the place we are studying was an ancient road that led from Prague Castle through Old Town to Vyšehrad. And one of the gates to the city through the fortification was a few dozen meters from here. So this was a gathering point for traders and other service tradesmen. In the later periods, like in the 17th and 18th century, then of course the social structure of the inhabitants changed and Renaissance buildings were built, followed by Baroque and Neoclassical and so on.
Archaeologists did of course know there would be findings here. Aside from the evidence from the sonar scans that preceded the dig, you will always find layers of pottery, bones and other relics wherever you dig down into city center Prague. But they were nonetheless greatly surprised by the excellent way everything under Národní třída had been preserved, even despite the encroachment of the metro in the 1980s and the dates that the evidence went back to. While they expected 14th century remnants from the establishment of New Town by Charles IV, they found even the predecessors of those structures, not the wooden and mud buildings themselves per se, but the outlines of them left like photo negatives in the ground. Another surprise was a burial site lying just under what is now Tesco.
What you see here is part of a burial site where the individual bodies have been laid in ordered rows, like on a chessboard. We have already dug out the graves here. The bodies were laying with their heads to the west, feet to the east, with their arms by their sides. And the state they were in was surprising, because they were wonderfully preserved. So all in all, we uncovered 6 graves that I would tentatively date to the turn of the 13th century.
So what do you know about the people who were buried here?
We know that among them were about 3 women. The anthropological survey is still underway. The bones show that the deceased worked in a hunched over position. They did hard work that left its mark on their skeletons. We're also going to do a DNA analysis as well, and from that we should have some approximate idea as to their ethnicity or where they were from. Takže budeme snad možná vědět něco víc o
přibližním etniku nebo místu, ze kterého pocházejí. Can you describe what it probably looked like right here at Národní třída at the time in the 12th or 13th century when these graves were dug?
The structures were primarily wooden with a couple of stone buildings and were compacted together. The road network was much smaller than it is today. There were less streets, but the road that we are on just now existed even in the early Middle Ages, and that's Spalina Street. The water situation was different. There must have been several creeks here, and we know that the terrain was much more rolling, with small hills and sunken farm paths. There was, of course, much more greenery, bushes and trees. There were groups of houses, like countryside cottages, one next to the other, making small units. What was in this area was a small settlement that provided material support for the old town.
Under what is going to be a very modern multifunctional building at this site, you can follow the complex meshing of one era into another. As the farmers ran out of space for storing their products and feeding their animals, the space became used more and more by merchants and craftsmen, until even more people began moving into the city in the 19th century, and there is more residential rather than economic area. In the 20th century, the lot changes altogether, filling up with restaurants, offices, administrative spaces, and so on, showing the various needs of each century until it is cemented over for the construction of the Soviet-style metro station. The metro, in fact, runs just meters away from the ancient cellars still being explored and learned from beneath Spalina Street. Ah, now we're a good how many meters? Under the street?
Four or five meters
under the street. It's very cool now here, and it's very beautiful.
This is the oldest of the cellars that we have here, so it's from the mid-1300s. The layout of this cellar is beautifully legible, and it's a wonderful teaching aid for students and art historians. You can follow the development of building methods and urban transformation on the structure here. The walls show right here that the original floor was almost 2 meters higher, and the ceiling was not vaulted, but flat. As they ran out of space, they made these other cellars under the street. This one is twice as large, and they stopped changing things for the most part at the beginning of the 16th century. And next door, there are another two cellars, each about 3 times larger than this one. What we see here is a wartime passage hole. During World War II, when they found there were too few air raid shelters, the protectorate government ordered that the Gothic cellars be used, because they were of such massive design. And they made passageways between them, so that if one began to collapse, people could run to another. It's wonderful, you have a real example here of how people lived and how things worked.
Coming back to the busy streets above is something of a shock, and it's a beautiful reminder of everything the modern world is literally based on and derives from. As one shopping center and multifunctional building springs up in Prague after another, I'm concerned about whether these ruins will go the way of so many others, being documented only to be preserved in archives while progress plows over the real thing. The answer is happily no.
It looks like most of the 11 cellars on this site will remain and will be written onto the list of cultural monuments. The intention for the future is that it be made accessible to the public in what could be a protected archaeological zone. Maybe in the end it will be preserved partly for archaeological and teaching purposes, or there could be a kind of gallery where the original structures that are in very good condition can remain and will not be damaged.
That was archaeologist Tomáš Cimbalák, ending that edition of Science Journal. Thanks for joining us today, and I hope you'll tune in again next month.
That edition of Science Journal, prepared and presented by Christian Falvey, has brought us to the end of today's show. You'll find us online at radio.cz. If you'd like to contact us, then please email us at english@radio.cz. This is Danielle Lazarová saying thanks for joining us today and goodbye. Thank you.
Thank you.